What type of entrepreneur do I have to be to build a company in this space successfully? Is it the same kind of skills that I need if I build a startup?
We're going to have AI agents support humans to do their job better, faster, stronger, AI-enabled robots, effectively. Beyond the cost savings that I've generated for myself, how does this translate in terms of competitiveness in the market? Am I reducing my prices? Is everyone else also reducing their prices because they have access to some AI?
Everyone is talking about AI, and artificial intelligence is everywhere, but the use cases are still not that clear. And one of the use cases is roll-ups, like buying companies, putting them together, and then trying to figure out everything that's administrative being better done through the help of artificial intelligence. Using AI to enable businesses be more efficient, be more productive, and combine them because you have the backend that you could put on as a layer to increase the value. So one of the trends right now we're seeing is entrepreneurs buying different companies that have the similar expertise, the similar offering, and bringing them together by connecting the dots through an AI-enabled backend, administrative work, everything in the back office. And that's exactly what Mike Malko and Cyrus Hesabi are talking about in this episode of the Unicorn Bakery. Cyrus is an aerospace engineer, very deep in the trenches, was at Salesforce before. Mike is a serial entrepreneur and angel investor, both of them in the US talking about everything that's important for use cases with AI, what's happening, what's not happening, and how you can use it for your company. So I hope this episode of the Unicorn Bakery brings tremendous value to you. If it does, please subscribe to the podcast. And now, Mike and Cyrus, over to you.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Unicorn Bakery. Today with Cyrus. And we will talk about AI, but we will also talk about old school companies. And we will talk about how you can combine both. And maybe, Cyrus, let's just start by you telling us just a little bit about yourself, but then mostly about your fascination with the intersection of AI, services companies, old school companies in general.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me, Mike. It's a real pleasure to be here. And I'm excited to share more about my work on the space and my passion for intersecting AI and the traditional economy as well. So yeah, brief background about myself. I was born in France, raised in the UK for most of my life. I've lived here as well in London for about 20 years. I'm an aerospace engineer by training, spent some time as a sales engineer at Salesforce, went to business school in the US, and then joined the fun world of venture capital in 2022. And then over the past 2 years, I've been exploring the intersection of technology for various traditional economy verticals that I felt were just historically falling, you know, out of the typical venture spectrum, but I felt were increasingly good candidates for venture investing or, you know, any sort of other types of investing as well. I'm working now with a search fund investor, so happy to share more about that too. But yeah, I think it's a huge topic, and I think there's lots to be shared. So happy to answer your questions.
Yeah, I mean, technology has always been used for private equity to improve companies, right? And the way I think about it is that a few years ago, like maybe 10 years ago, you usually use technology to reduce costs, right? To basically improve one part of the P&L. But now you can also use it to increase revenue or to reach more customers and to just like, you have just more leverage overall. But maybe you can tell me a little bit about what has changed over the last few years when you think about the intersection of technology and the old economy, because a lot has changed, right?
Absolutely. I think a lot has changed for sure. I think by and large, the main change has been the democratization of AI in two ways. One, in terms of cost, how much it costs to distribute, to produce new tools, and so on. And two, in terms of willingness to adopt, right? Especially if people are increasingly familiar with AI-type interfaces in their personal lives, you know, think through ChatGPT, Perplexity, you know, all this good stuff. It's easier to push as well in the workplace as well, if I may say. I think there's other drivers as well. kind of non-tech and more to do with just wanting to be more competitive, wanting to do more with less and things like that. But I think on the technology front and its frontier in terms of being applied to the traditional economy, I think, yeah, those are probably the two main factors. And by the way, I think we're still very early in that journey as well. I know we hear a lot about AI-enabled services and AI rollups now over the past few months, but I think in the grand scheme of things, it's still very much in its early phases.
Yes, and you've been a very big proponent of it for a while, right? You even have like a WhatsApp group of people who are building in this industry. You're posting a lot of content about it. This is also originally why I thought it would be good to chat over here, because I just know that you're not thinking about much else. And maybe you can give a couple examples of what we're actually talking about, so that people who have not heard of AI-enabled services or AI rollups can get an understanding of the basics. Maybe we start with like a basic definition or something that like explains a little, and then we can get into like some examples afterwards, and then we can drill a bit deeper.
For sure. And I think, by the way, there is multiple layers to this. I think there is a big overarching theme, which is AI-enabled services, which I'll explain first. I think you have rollups in the context of AI-enabled services, and then you also have AI in the context of rollups. I think this is kind of interchangeably used, but I think it's probably worth adding my views on how these kind of differentiate and what belongs to what category as well. I think on the AI-enabled services piece, the best way to define it is just to say, in the last 20, 25 years, we've been, in venture and in the world of technology, we've been focused a lot on software for things, right? Software for your CRM, for your salespeople, software for your customer service, software for, insert function, insert problem. And we haven't talked about services much, if at all. And I dare say services is a little bit of a vulgar term in VC, just because it's not the economics are typically just not there, right? What I mean by AI-enabled services is redefining the services that surround us that are typically quite labor-intensive. Your accountant, your lawyer, your property manager, your insurance broker, you name it, really. They make up the vast majority of the economy. We don't even think about them on a day-to-day basis, but they're there. And it's about redefining those services for, quote-unquote, the age of AI, if I may say. So to say, with today's technology, with today's ways of doing things, are there ways to rethink and augment people who work in these services industries so that a new generation potentially of exciting services companies can emerge?
Okay, so basically the first thing we're talking about then is, how do you use AI to improve the value creation in the services industry? And that can also have a couple of different shapes, right? So you can either sell software to accountants, or you can sell AI to accountants so that they can use AI to do bookkeeping, to do accounting, maybe even tax prep more efficiently, right?
Correct.
Or what you can also do is you either buy the accountant and then force them to use AI, or you can just build your own accounting company, base it all on AI, and undercut the prices of someone who might not use AI, right? So there's a lot of different shapes of how to do that. But maybe let's start. AI-enabled services, we mean using AI to reshape the way services are being provided.
Absolutely.
That's like this one. Yes. That's this one piece, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But then tell us, like, for most people will probably know, but what are rollups? Like, most people have heard of it, but do your own definition of rollups, and how do they actually factor into our conversation right now?
Yeah, of course, absolutely. And I think, and I appreciate, maybe we can talk about this down the line in our conversation too. I think at the core, a lot of this kind of will always be a bridge between, the world of VC and private equity as well, which is by the way quite interesting. So what is meant by rollups? Well, it's quite a visual term, right? It's kind of like you're rolling up a little piece of paper to make it bigger. And I think what it means is you're aggregating a lot of small businesses and shifting them from standalone small local businesses to one unified, ideally integrated platform that has a lot of scale economies, data network effects in this situation as well, and just benefits from being a bigger company. So all the advantages that you might get from that, and happy to go into those.
So basically, roll up is I buy a couple of smaller companies and then morph them into one bigger companies to use the advantages.
Exactly. Right? I buy all the bakeries in my village and I make it one big bakery group. I buy all the
let's not use the bakery or coffee shop example because there has been a little bit of controversy in Germany recently, and many of our listeners are from Germany, about a VC funded coffee chain.
Oh, really?
Has been 90% of the content that I've seen on my on the German side of my LinkedIn was about someone vandalizing this like VC funded coffee chain. So
okay. We
will buy services companies
that you don't care about that much. Yes.
Exactly. Accounting firms. Okay, great. So now we have like established like the ground layer of what we're talking about. And my question might be, why is this so interesting right now? Because rollups have been around for a very long time. There's this like running gag here in the US that, there's an HVAC company. For those who don't know what HVAC is, it's like the cooling, like the ACs, the cooling, yeah, heating, all of that in your
apartment. The stereotype now of search funds.
Exactly. Yeah. And then like every single HVAC company has either been rolled up or gets like 10 emails a day of, hey, we want to buy your company. So like rollups have been a thing for a while, right? So why are you that interested in it right now? And I assume the big talking point is AI. But let's talk a little bit more about why is AI so helpful when we talk about these types of companies?
For sure. I think there's multiple things to be said about this whole roll-up concept. And I'm trying to make it as concise and as possible as well. I don't want to open too many cans of worms at once. I think the first thing that's interesting about the roll-up piece is that there is a huge wealth of small businesses that are potentially up for grabs. I think if we just step back from the AI piece, for a minute, which by the way is feeding a lot of this trend, this broader trend with people going for entrepreneurship through acquisition routes, trying to acquire new businesses, because on the other side, you have also lots of people who are looking to sell their business from the previous generation, slowly going into retirement. From an AI perspective, when you think about AI-enabled services, for some industries, and I can detail kind of how I've thought about, what makes a roll-up-ready AI-enabled services play as well. But for some of these AI-enabled services, it makes the most sense to do a roll-up because that's how you go and acquire your first customers in the most potentially efficient way, financially efficient way. So instead of raising a ton of capital and then going after your customers in the hopes that they would switch away from the existing service providers that they've had for a long time and come to you, which will be not the best use of your capital, you might find that you can, for a fairly good price, acquire some of these businesses that are, to the extent that they're quite small, acquire them for access to their customers, and then use that for initial scale. Is that making sense?
I think it is. And let's dive a little deeper into that. So who is buying these companies?
So you mean the small businesses, right?
Yeah. You said, I want to buy them so that I have like access to the demand immediately.
Okay, so but I can give you some concrete examples if you'd like. So
yes, please.
So let's say you are a really hot theme in Europe has been property management in many forms. So we can use that, because if listeners are going to Google this, they'll probably find a lot going on in property management. So let's use that. So think about, I want to build an AI-enabled property management services business. So what is that job? I'm managing the building. I'm managing the fire code. I have to manage payment collections because people are sending me money. And I'm also basically the orchestrator of repair works throughout the building, right? Very labor intensive, very localized, and so on. Now, with AI, there's tons of things that you can do to improve that, right? You can automate a lot of the comms with communications with people. You can automate, some level of like payment tracking. You can use AI to read, like ingest long documents, like compliance documents, and support you with that aspect of things as well. So let's say I'm thinking about that. If I want to go and acquire my first customers, it might be better for me if I just go and buy some of these small property management players locally, because that would help me access directly my customers. It might be better to use my money that way versus if I try to convince people across these different buildings to switch away from their current service provider to me, basically. It doesn't mean that my entire company story has to be revolving around just buying businesses, but it might mean that in the early days, I do that just because it helps me get initial access to some customers.
Got it. And so customer access is one of the main reasons, apparently. Are there any other reasons why you would buy these types of companies?
Yes, I think in general for these kind of roll-up plays, and by the way, there's also a whole avenue with just building your company from scratch in services and all that. So happy to touch on that. But I think when you're in businesses where there is some sort of regulatory barrier to entry, where it's fairly like non-cyclical, so whether the economy is kind of up or down, you're fairly you have fairly good visibility on your revenue, when a lot of the companies are fairly standardized, so in the sense that a lot of the SMEs will kind of look and operate in similar ways and have like similar customer bases and things like that, it can make quite a bit of sense to go acquire these businesses. The bonus, and what we should also look at, is how much competition there is in this space, right? Are there a lot of other PE actors sometimes who are also competing to buy these small businesses? Is the market, what we call fragmented? So are there like thousands of these small businesses to go after, or just a few? Because these also impact, by simple law of supply and demand, your ability to negotiate acquisition at attractive prices, basically. And of course, if you're here to, make some investment return for yourself as well, this is a consideration that's, hugely important.
Yeah. And it seems like many people, specifically in Europe, have discovered this more recently. I know that there's like this wave of like former tech entrepreneurs now like building roll-ups or thinking about roll-ups, or even like some funds that specifically focus on providing money for roll-ups. So is it just AI that has prompted it all, or is there anything else that I'm missing?
No, I think there's two things at the same time, actually. So one might even say AI roll-up is kind of the latest two buzzwords that we've put together in some way. And that's why I also preluded saying like there's multiple facets to this, because I think in parallel, there's also, as I was saying, like a lot of interest in going after and buying these companies for this. I mean, there's multiple reasons. I say one of the chief ones is the realization that there is a huge wealth transfer going on over the next few years from this prior generation of business owners to the next generation, basically, right? I think in parallel, you might add other things. You might add the fact that, and this is my own hypothesis, but at the same time as startup founding has democratized, it's cheaper now to build your business than it was 20 years ago. Maybe it's also become more saturated. So people are looking for new ways to buy a business that's perhaps perennial and cash positive. Maybe there is also an element of wanting agency and wanting to, go back into kind of concrete, tangible industries. That's something I've heard some of my friends who are in this space say as well. So I think there is this as well. And I think among that crowd, there's, of course, the curiosity and excitement for how to use AI. And so I've tried, I think, to divide up people who are trying to go after VC types of plays. So we're going to build the next kind of call center company, and it's going to be AI enabled, and we're rolling up right now because we need to grow and acquire customer data and scale, and then we're going to go into this kind of multi-revenue stream platform, these visionary types of VC plays, I think on one side. And I think on the other, you have a new version of roll-ups, which has been around for many years, to say, we have found an opportunity here to aggregate businesses in this niche, but on top of other areas of value creation, we are also, exceptionally good at implementing and building kind of AI for various functions of that platform. I think these two are kind of, they look the same in the early days. I think they're overall different stories, both very exciting, of course.
Yeah, I think there's always a lot of nuance to it, right? And then there's like this third thing that you alluded to earlier, which is I am using someone else's money to buy a company, but I'm just buying one company. Right.
Oh,
so
yes.
there's like a handful of people also who are buying mid-cap mid-market companies that have been going on for a while. They're buying out the owners, and then they're just like setting up themselves as the CEO only of that specific company. So they're not rolling up anything. So usually the targets there are a little bigger. And this also goes into the direction of what you said with like the wealth transfer. People are looking for like, how does my company continue when I'm retiring?
Yes,
right. So sure. That's like the like another pillar of this whole thing. Maybe let's switch gears a little bit. Let's assume I'm building an AI-enabled service company, and it doesn't matter whether my like long-term plan right now is to like build a VC type company out of it, or whether I just want to, in quotation marks, just want to build like a roll-up case, and then sell it a few years afterwards. There is a lot of playbooks that you have to go through to actually make sure that it works, right? Because it's not simple, oh, I buy these like 15 accounting firms and then they're worth so much more because I will make them more efficient and then I sell them again, right?
There's, for sure.
There's a lot of work, culture, like integrating systems with each other, et cetera. So what have you seen that actually works really well when it comes to implementing these playbooks?
I think you're so right to ask this question. One of my biggest fears is thinking too top down about these things. I think it's too easy intellectually to say, "Oh yeah, I'm just gonna combine AI and this job, and I know best, and fantastic." And I think this is recipe for disaster, frankly, recipe for bubble like mechanics. I'm gonna give a principle first, and then tactical application. So the base principle in this stuff is primary research, primary understanding, and bottoms up thinking in terms of the job at hand. So I'm in an accountancy firm, let's say, to take your example. Who are the employees? Go around, picture yourself in an episode of The Office in Scranton. I'm going to the office room. Who's doing what? And what are the days made of? What are the tasks made of? I would really break down the tasks, what needs to be done in what flow. In parallel to the task, thinking about the information flow, where is that information stored? Is it kind of in my brain? So can I digitize this? Is there an audit trail? Where am I sending the information to? Who are the bottlenecks? Kind of building a flow of work and data, or rather information. I think that's kind of the base principle, because this ties it back to people, the individual employees who you're trying to augment and trying to kind of make more productive. And they're everything. They're the core of this business. So services is about people serving other people at the end. You can't change that. So it really has to start with that, I think, is the first thing. Understanding, I guess, before you kind of investing your time and your money and other people's money in it, I think the understanding what are the key drivers and the main levers to be pulling and what your risk areas and blind spots are, again, in terms of people, organization, and workflow. And I think that then this was a short, fairly, short set of sentences, but it's extremely kind of hard and tedious to do. And then the second piece is tying it back to the dollar value. Are you like, what's the impact of what you've done? Okay, and now I've saved 20% of my week's time in terms of work. Is that reinvested into, am I a salesperson and I can reuse that time to do more sales? Great, more dollar value from the AI. Or am I just, having a better work-life balance? What's happening as a result of this kind of efficiency, assuming it's successfully implemented? And I think the third thing and the last thing is, beyond the cost savings that I've kind of generated for myself at the kind of unit economics level, as in it's cheaper for me to deliver the same service that I used to, how does this translate in terms of competitiveness in the market? Am I reducing my prices? Is everyone else also reducing their prices because they have access to some AI? So in which case, we're all just on the race down to the bottom. Am I providing a more premium service so I can actually raise my prices and increase my margins on both sides? I think just tying it back to people and then dollar value or euro value is kind of the way to go. And I don't know that we're doing enough of this as people in this space right now.
Got it. And I mean, asking especially people in Europe about roll-ups, like a lot of path lead to you, whether it's like asking founders who you should talk to.
Oh, that's like, good. It means I'm doing my job fairly well then.
Or like investors also. I think it's partly just because you've built this community and you've like posted a lot about it and like thought a lot about it. But one thing that might be interesting for me to understand, and also maybe for people who are thinking about this, is what type of entrepreneur, what type of person do I have to be to build a company in this space successfully? Is it the same kind of skills that I need if I build a startup? Is it slightly different skills that I need? Is it completely different skills that I need? Like, who are the prime examples of being good at building these types of companies? And I assume there's different archetypes, but maybe you can just talk a little bit about when should someone think, hey, this might be something for me, or also think, hey, maybe this is not the right fit for me.
So, great question. I don't know. I'll give you kind of what I think is a great combo. I don't know that anyone really is kind of precluded from doing this sort of stuff. I just think the skill set or the environment that you're coming into, depending on what you're doing, is something you should be aware of pretty well. So I think let's start with the following. You can't move fast and break things in a services business. So it's not kind of the hack, you know, like the hacker mantra, it's fine if it doesn't work. Our first users are huge fans of us. You know, that is great in the traditional startup era. Here, if you're providing critical, like just any service to people, service quality matters. That cannot go away regardless of how the sausage is made. It has to be made well and compliantly, one might argue as well. So the people that you need are at the crux. I think the most important is someone who understands the, who has the earned secret or is ready to get the earned secret on the operational side. What is, how does operating a business successfully in this space work? Now, you can have it because you're a founder and you've previously founded one such business in the, you know, maybe you were a PE-backed operator and now you're doing this for this new era. It can also be that you're buying your first business and the seller actually is staying with you guys and is super aligned on the next stage of the company. It can be actually that you guys have never done this, but you have a ton of amazing advisors around you who know this. It can come in multiple ways. I think the end principle is you need, I think, the operating pragmatism to understand what, you know, how to run a services org in this business, be it at the beginning, just to even fact check your own theses on what you're going to do in this space. Because change management is hard, even in a very small org, and integration is hard. I think the second skill set someone has to bring, whether again, co-founder or hired or other ways, is if we stick to the roll-up element, is M&A process, right? Are you good at diligencing acquisitions fast and well? Because on one hand, I said, instead of raising round after round of venture money for sales and marketing, you can, you know, invest money into acquiring the business. The flip side of it is a customer can technically churn out of one company and to the other, right? But like, I can use Deliveroo one day, Gorillas the next day. But once a company is acquired, it's acquired. So you have to probably acquire high quality companies fast. And then the third thing I'd say, and we probably don't think about that enough, is someone who's good at integration and who's good at doing the back. So the integration on two things. First is, are you able to align the troops, people? Because at the end, it's all going back to leadership and organizational behavior and topics. But are you able to align the troops on the change plan? Are you able to have a common touch with people who might be quite, you know, who just have very different lives to you and who are now under your leadership? So you have to manage that. And I think integration also, and that's probably a different person, from a IT perspective, to the extent that you are building an AI-enabled services business, you're building a data infrastructure that underpins it. And so you're plumbing, literally, I think, plumbing data architectures across various companies that you've acquired and trying to unify them into one. And so I think the most likely, the only founder trait I think that you need as the co-founder is probably the common touch intangible traits that I mentioned. Everything else is always hireable, I'd say. But yeah, I would just say that's kind of I think the worst thing you can do is to go after an industry that sounds great, but you haven't surrounded yourself enough with people who've lived through a journey trying to integrate these companies or operate these companies such that you might find yourself, you know, facing unexpected pitfalls.
Maybe two more questions in the interest of time. I mean, we could talk about this for days.
Yeah.
But let's start with, how are you evaluating these companies? If, like, because you are investing money into them, right? You are providing the money to either build or buy them, right? So what are the criteria that you're looking at?
So, okay, so I think there's a few things. Specifically in this kind of AI-enabled roll-up category, I think, well, I guess chiefly is belief in the opportunity to transform the gross margin structure or the contribution margin, or you might call it the unit economics of service delivery in this business. So is this a business that is labor intensive, that has a significant share of automatable work, of repetitive work, I guess, chiefly, where the significant chunk of an employee's workload is repetitive tasks that frankly, they might also want to kind of, you know, outsource to the machine to augment them into doing something a bit more productive and fulfilling for themselves. So that is kind of the base. Is this an industry in which this can be done? Two, I think, is around, is this a team set up in however way kind of you've put it together that, you know, is thinking about it in similar ways as kind of what I was saying earlier, right? Around kind of bottoms up thinking, clear industry thesis and things like that. I think that those are kind of the kind of market and team points. I think in the VC context, you're also thinking about kind of what is the strategy around product versus M&A. So you're assessing M&A pipeline, you're assessing what do the initial kind of companies, well, it depends also what stage, right? Kind of I've done some incubation stage investments, some slightly later stage, right? So to the extent that there is in any extent, you're trying to understand also what is the quality of the companies that have been, you know, that are available to acquire if you're going to the roll-up route. What have I missed in what I've said? Yeah, I think there, and I think there is an element also of what is the product that you're building, and what is the what kind of level of evidence can we get around impact of the product that has been developed so far. And kind of what's happened, what are the employees saying? Is this, has it actually translated into meaningful dollar value if that's been operated already? In the early stages, kind of like typical pre-seed and seed, it really ends up being about kind of do we have a thesis on the space and on the people who are backing? Later on, of course, you're looking at initial evidence around at the unit company level, what kind of value creation has been affected. Is that helping to answer your...
Yeah, that's definitely helpful.
Yeah.
Maybe as a last question to close it off, where can people learn more about this topic? Maybe also more about like your own thinking about the topic. But then in general, like let's assume I want to learn more. I might want to found like a company in the space. Maybe I want to start investing in the space if I have a lot of money. So what is the best way to educate myself?
So, I mean, there's tons of resources now kind of increasingly floating around. So, I mean, I can do a little shameless plug on this one. I have a little Substack that I put some articles in the format of essays. So you can kind of read those as well. I know my friend and peer Sahil Patwa, he has a good Substack. You know, happy to kind of share a set of kind of newsletters
put it in the show notes.
Yeah, for sure. We can do that. There's a lot.
So is it mostly Substacks then
I think there's a fair bit of people. Yeah, I think so. There's a fair bit of that. There's some market maps that we've published as well in the past where you can see the companies that are kind of coming up. You can, one of the things you might notice is like some industries are kind of overrepresented right now.
Which ones?
There's a lot going on in accounting. There's a lot going on in, you know, property management, as I said. There's a lot going on in, to some extent, I'd say also like insurance topics kind of at large, which is kind of super exciting. I'd say if you're a founder, it might be interesting to also consider where the puck is going. So maybe this is opening up the topic for a different conversation, but I think the next frontier right now is around like physical AI and physical work services. And I think you might want to consider that, in which case robotics is also something to go and acquaint yourself with as a founder.
Yeah, I just made a couple of robotics investments.
Amazing. Well, then see, perfect. So,
I can forward them to you, and then we can see whether we can deploy the robots in any of your companies?
Well, I mean, to the extent that here in this conversation we've been saying we're going to have AI agents support humans to do their job better, faster, stronger, and create modern era services organizations, you could expand the point and say AI enabled robots effectively are going to support physical worker humans to do their job better, faster, stronger. So
yeah, I think that's a good way to close it. We are buying companies and then we'll see how robots improve them.
Yes, exactly. I think,
go ahead.
I was going to say one point, I think, that I forgot to mention earlier around the interest, like what makes this interesting and why I found this personally interesting from the perspective of a VC investor in the past. I think one crucial point, because people might say, oh yeah, but why don't I just invest or build an AI agent business for a job, right? And not a services company. And I think that point is around where is there the most commoditization and where you might accrue the most value to yourself. And one might make the argument here that as a services organization, you're in a perennial business model where their service is continuously needed, and you're able to build a new business with the right to win as a new entrant because you have a better cost structure using the fact that these AI agents are increasingly kind of commonplace and democratized versus maybe, in some industries that you might not find the same economics for yourself if you were to go the AI agent route. That's maybe a hot take, but maybe this is a good thing to add to the mix of this conversation too.
Okay. Well, Cyrus, thank you so much. If anyone wants to learn more about AI-enabled roll-ups and AI-enabled services companies or anything else, you should check out the Substack, where there's way more information than we could cover today. And yeah, happy investing, happy building, and speak soon.
Thank you so much, Mike. A pleasure to be here.
I hope this episode was as insightful as it was to us, because it's so important to understand and discover the use cases on how to actually make use of AI. You can listen to it all day long, and we all know that it's here, but what's the actual process, the actual use case that we can make use of it and use AI inside the company to be more productive and more efficient? If this episode was helpful to you, please send it to a friend and subscribe to the podcast to not miss any other episode. Thank you so much to Mike and Cyrus. It was a great episode to listen to, and see you next week with a new episode of the Unicorn Bakery.